This is the MLWRadio.com Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger. Second show of the year, not even 10 days into the new year. It's the second show that we're doing because Japanese wrestling tends to be very busy around the first week of the year, as always. And as always, I'm joined by my friend, my co-host, partner in crime, Dylan Fox.
I don't know about this crime stuff. I'm a citizen of the world and always try to keep things on the up and up around here. I'm not trying to get into any legal trouble on this show, on the Eastern Lariat. This is a show that's not about crimes or anything.
Usually not about crime, no.
Yes, that's true. I don't think I guess that's true. We have seen some criminals take hold in the Japanese wrestling scene. More than one occasion, actually, now that I think about it. But regardless, on this show, I'm glad to be your partner and your co-host and all of that stuff, and especially your friend, just as I'm a friend to all the listeners out there. So thank you for tuning in for another show. We're really pushing it for a third show because remember our last show of the year was at the very end.
Yeah.
Just the day, you know, so we have, if you are an Eastern Lariat fan, you have a lot of good content right now, as always. And I'm so happy to be here doing it. I could do a show every day. There's so much stuff going on in Japanese wrestling that, in fact, sometimes I do shows every day on patreon.com/EasternLariat, just so happens. But first of all, before we go anywhere, I do have to shout out because there was an Eastern Lariat family member who accomplished something recently, and I had to shout him out right away on the start of the show. Dr. Jonathan Foy.
Yes.
Man, he wrote a book about All Japan Pro Wrestling. It's split into Pro Wrestling Noah. He had all kinds of people, be guests and give quotes to him on it, all the way down to Richard Slinger, mid-carder. All Japan and Noah.
I remember Slinger, yes.
Yes. He was all the way into especially early Noah. He did his things.
The Chattanooga Choo Choo Train was his move.
Yes, shout out a Tennessean as well.
Yeah,
a Tennessee original with a Chattanooga Choo Choo hit there. There's a spot in wrestling called the Tennessee Tiptoe as well, where you bump the referee. It's very dumb, but
it sounds very dumb too.
Yes, it's like it's this thing that Jay White kind of did that one time when he like accidentally bumped the referee. It's like you bump heads, then back up and hit the referee accidentally.
Oh, I see. Yes.
But regardless, the point is, Dr. Jonathan, he wrote this book. Great cover on it. I've got a copy of myself that I'm planning to read. I'm going to do a full review on the Patreon too. So always putting over the fans and the listeners who accomplished things. And it looks like he did something really cool with this. I cannot wait to read it. And hopefully everybody can check it out. Go onto his page at Jonathan Foy, F-O-Y-E, on his Twitter. It has a link right on the pinned post. And it looks really cool. So I can't wait to read it.
Yes.
But either way, shout out. He got a lot of cool people to collaborate on it. And very proud of him for doing that.
Shout out to you, Jonathan. Definitely sounds very interesting. I should really get into it as well. So I'm looking forward to your review of it on the Patreon, of course, I guess.
Absolutely. Big hosh tier.
Right.
Shout out.
Patreon.com/EasternLariat. That's it, of course. And
look at all the shows I've done already. 01, right. Almost same day review. Two Noah shows, Reboot and the New Sunrise. I want to do the In Innovation Cup. I think that's the last thing on my agenda now that we get through all this craziness that we're about to. Both Wrestle Kingdom shows, same day reviews on there. So if you can't wait for the free show to drop, go on to the Patreon. You get cool stuff all the way. Tokyo Joshi Pro, I have a review up as well on there. So it's like every single corner of wrestling, you'll get something on there.
Listen, full disclosure, Dylan, I am absolutely not going to watch this U Cups thing.
Oh,
it sounds like the dumbest thing in the world to me. Okay. Like, not from the execution side of it. I figure it was a good show and stuff, but why would I watch a tournament between the Noah Junior stables when I exactly know that at least 5 turns are coming within the next 6 months?
That's generous. 6 months, you think, that they're going to hold off these 5 turns.
Over under, Dylan. Over under.
And well, sometimes their turns can turn and not even turn fully. Just look at Ogawa and Hayata.
Oh yeah. Do we count that as a turn or not?
And that's true. The things are very hectic right now. I actually like the idea on paper. It reminds me of like a World Cup scenario. And I like the idea of having a full team go with, you know, a tag match, a four-way match. Like, that kind of thing I like. I also don't love it that it's like a 3-day deal. I think you could get a lot more mileage out of it. If they really dedicated themselves to like a full team tournament, I could get down with that as something unique. So I like the concept on paper. And I will see. We'll see how it's executed. I want to keep the cards close to my chest. Was it a great show? Was it a bad show? Was it somewhere in between? We will talk about it all eventually. But on this show, we have many, many things to talk about. So we will talk about good ideas, bad ideas. You want to talk about the stupidest thing ever. Oh, there's something that qualifies for that. And I've been waiting to go on this show to talk about. And my prayers have been answered. We did it. And I cannot wait to talk about this certain subject, which should be a good Eastern Lariat moment when we get to it.
Oh, looking forward to that. And I have some great news for you, Dylan. Actually, the tournament is only 2 shows. And the 3rd show has the junior title match that was built up on the first one.
My criticism stays the same. I wish it lasted longer.
Okay. At least on this show, we're going to get Kaito Kiyomiya versus Super Crazy. So that's the thing now. Well, as I was on the topic of full disclosure, Dylan, full disclosure once again here. My quest to subscribe to Stardom World has once again come to a crushing halt. Because I now found out I never received that verification email in the first place. Okay, now I tried again. But now the page is telling me that my credit card number is wrong. But it is not.
Does this have to do with your crimes you were talking about earlier?
Maybe. I don't know. Okay. But for other subjects, my credit card is very much fine. And it's the only one that I have. So I can't. I can't subscribe to Stardom World. I'm sorry.
Well, I believe you, Striga, if that is your real name that you're using on here right now. But yes, the continued quest to go into the Stardom World continues for you.
We'll keep you updated on my quest.
You want to support them. They won't allow you.
Well, we'll see about my King's quest to subscribe to Stardom World. Well, Dylan, we have some topics here we want to talk about on this show today. We are actually recording this on the day of the 3rd day of Wrestle Kingdom. It sounds very stupid when you say it like that. We have not watched the show. I have watched the dark matches that were free on YouTube, but I was not going to pay for the show that is going to be up on Wrestle Kingdom and on Wrestle Universe and New Japan World next week. So I'm going to wait until next week to watch the show. I'm going to give it a watch on Wrestle Universe. Shout out to Stu Fulton and Mark Pickering there. They did commentary for that show. So that's where I'm going to watch it, and I presume that's where you're going to watch it as well.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of their commentary. I also have to praise Mark for his great work on social media hyping the show up.
Absolutely.
Very much ready to engage in this cross-promotional deal. So it's going to be interesting to see how that comes across. I heard that there was some kind of like technical difficulties anyway, like the power got cut in the arena somehow. So I can't speak on it in, you know, full grasp, but I'm sure it'll be an interesting show to watch.
Yeah, that reminds me of those Ring of Honor pay-per-views where the camera guy falls over the cable and accidentally pulls the plug. You know, that's very unfortunate when you do a big show like that and like charge $35 for it and then the power goes out. That's bad.
I feel like that show lost a lot of momentum from when it was announced in general. When that happened, when that got announced, I was so excited for it.
Yeah, we did a show on it, and we were both very excited. But usually you'd think from a show announcement to the show actually happening, there would be some excitement building. But like you said, the excitement actually fell. And much of it, in my opinion, had to do with how everything was executed. And in wrestling these days, they tend to make announcements that actually should be surprises. Like, for example, I'm just going to WWE for an example. They announced Mickie James for the Royal Rumble instead of having her as a surprise entrant. And much like that, the entire thing of the Noah versus New Japan thing would have been so much more exciting if that appearance on Wrestle Kingdom would have been the first thing that you have heard about from Noah versus New Japan. Like, imagine the entire Noah roster just walking into Wrestle Kingdom without anyone knowing about a joint show between the two companies.
Yeah, that segment was very interesting. I guess I'll save my thoughts for that until we get on to the full show. But that whole thing was very interesting. I get where you're coming from as well. You know, just in general, it felt like the hype had died down a little bit. I think it was handled a little interestingly and not in a great way. But look, they still got a nice house out of it, over 7,000 people there. So, you know,
more than the second night of Wrestling.
Yes, that's right. It actually beat the second night, yes, on there. We will talk about Wrestle Kingdom in full. But yeah, we have not watched today's show. I think we should kind of handle that in chronological order.
Yes, exactly.
We're jumping ahead.
Look, right I got some other topics before that. First of all, of course, with the new COVID variant going around the world now, COVID in Japan is very much a topic once again, especially during New Year's now in Japan, with a lot of companies sharing talent in Japan. All Japan Pro Wrestling has probably the biggest problem of them all, because they had several wrestlers and staff members showing fever symptoms. We haven't heard anything new about that as of the moment we are recording this, but they did postpone / cancel their show in Okasaki on January 9, on the Sunday that this show is coming out now. I'm just looking at the page, but there's nothing new on the situation. The great Sasuke was diagnosed with COVID. Several Yoshi wrestlers as well. Yuri, for example, of Ganbare Pro was diagnosed with COVID. So that's a thing again in Japan. So companies should really do more testing these days, I guess. So that's not going to go away for the foreseeable future.
Sad stuff that it's happening that way. I hope that one day we can escape all of this. I am not a doctor or a scientist or a government official. I know that may surprise
some. Not even I'm going back to the old days. Not even a scientist, Dylan.
Well, I'm not that either. to say that. And neither are you.
clearly.
Yes, but regardless, I cannot give you any definitive answers to any of this, unfortunately, other than I hope that everything can work out eventually one day. But unfortunately, the realistic answer is that it's probably going to be quite a bit into the future.
Yes, quite a bit into the future, with two names that I want to discuss, Dylan. Hideki Suzuki and Tim Thatcher. They both got released from WWE. It was weird that they got signed in the first place, to be quite honest, because neither of them, realistically, is a WWE guy. For Thatcher, it seemingly worked out in the beginning, with the old NXT still being in place. But with the new one, it was very clear that he didn't really have a place there. Hideki was there as the bodyguard of the Diamond Mine, or what was his role?
He was technically known as the coach of the team. So he was like kind of the underboss, I guess you could say, teaching everything he knew.
The Bad Luck Fale of the Diamond Mine.
Yeah, I don't think Fale taught anybody anything,
has a dojo. He has a dojo, and it's looking quite successful, because there is this trainee that is now in WXW. His name is Oscar, and he trained in the Fale Dojo in New Zealand, and he's quite good.
Shout out. But yeah, that was Hideki's role. And the thing is, he was on TV like the day before they let him go. He was still on even in through their rebranding 2.0, whatever. He was a character on the show, surprisingly, as Hachiman.
Yeah. But well, now he was released and he sent out a tweet that he is able to be booked after February 5th. So after his 30 days are over, 30 days in the NXT contracts. And same goes for Timothy Thatcher. And I was thinking Hideki Suzuki, of course, would be a perfect guy for Great to sign to their promotion or even just use on their shows. And with the UWF rules and with the Lydia UWF style, Timothy Thatcher would be perfect for that style as well. I would love to see a Tim Thatcher run in Japan, especially with that style.
These are two of my absolute favorite wrestlers, both of them, Hideki and Timothy Thatcher. I think, unfortunately, Thatcher's never wrestled in Japan. I was looking at Cage Match.
No.
On there, so I don't know what the deal is with that. That's his choice or what he would want, if that's anything he would want. But he's a great wrestler. Anywhere he goes will be good. I think he has enough cachet that he actually could be a guy that AEW would look at and give a shot to, because just his indie run was very prolific during his time in America and obviously Europe in your neck of the woods with WXW as well. So I could see either of those options more so than Japan. Hideki, I think, is more than likely going to come back to Japan and be booked. I do think that that is a great idea. Like, stylistically, I would love that. The thing is, they don't really even do that many UWF shows, unfortunately. That's kind of been my big issue with recently. But, you know, he's a fine wrestler. He could still bring his style even in normal matches. His connections are mostly with Noah, so I think that he'll probably wind up there. But in the same role he kind of left in, as kind of like a guy, like a floating guy, like good matches and all of that, but not really doing anything of note. I think that's his like freelance gimmick, so to speak. Like, where he'll wrestle in all these places. I'm sure he'll have a match or two at Great. He might even go back to Big Japan for a show or something like that every now and then.
Yeah, like he would be a good freelancer, to be quite honest. Yes.
Yeah, I think that like that was his role when he left, and I think that's probably where he'll wind back up, unless someone in Noah really pushes for him to have more of a bigger role in Sugira-Goon. I think that it should be Suzuki-Goon. He should take over.
Yeah, he should take over. Exactly.
Yes. But, you know, I
unfortunately,
think
Suzuki-Goon is a name that is not very well liked with the Noah fans.
That's true. That would be that would actually be a pretty great heel, like, invader gimmick. Like Suzuki-Goon, but it's him instead.
Suzuki-Goon 2.
Yes, and his matches would no doubt be much better than the first version, I would say. But yeah, like I think that's really where I see him. A guy, freelance dude. If Noah makes a play for him, I think he would probably go there. And he's, you know, he was in DDT 2 in the past as well. So he's wrestled matches there as well. So you can kind of see him bouncing back and forth between them and doing, you know, because he does have a goofy side to him. We saw it when he dressed up as in a full Gundam Wing costume at one of the end of the year shows they did. So I anticipate that. I don't think he'll be in contention for a title or anything like that, or doing anything big. But I mean, we saw that match with Nakajima, you know, when he came back, was an incredible match. Like at the start of 2020, it was like right before one of his, you know, early on that year, he left at the end of the year, but the beginning of the year in 2020, him and Nakajima had just an absolutely fantastic match. I think that was like a match of the year candidate to myself and a lot of people. So if they could just get some big matches out of him, you know, every once in a while, I'm down for that because I know it'll be awesome.
Yes, would definitely be awesome. We're not going to go the lengths to talk about Samoa Joe once again here. Got released as well. Well, that is the names that I got from there. I guess that's all that really matter to Japanese wrestling. Then I would say, Dylan, from here, let's take it to... what do you want to do first, DDT or TJPW?
I want to do Tokyo Joshi Pro first.
All right. TJPW, they did their show on Itaewon, Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling 2022. They had the main event of Mio Yamashita and Mitsuki for the Princess of Princess Championship, as well for the International Princess Championship. Maki Ito defeated Hikari Noah to become the new champion. Mio and her did a great photo afterwards, posing with their two belts. Those were the two main matches on the show that drew a house of 695 fans to Curtain Hall, as much as you could do during these days in that building. Except for that, there was a match between Yuka Sakazaki and Yuki Arai on that show. Yuki Arai getting a lot of more singles matches now, especially on these Curtain Hall shows. It's almost like an unofficial trial series of hers. We got Nodoka Onesan, a gimmick from the early days of Tokiyoshi Pro Wrestling, when Nodoka Tenma was still doing her gimmick there. And also, Dylan, in the first match of that show, actually Suzume and Arisu Endo teamed up. And remember, 1 year ago, Arisu Endo made her debut against Suzume, and they got the victory over Mahiro Kiryu and Mukamo Yamamoto on that show. That was a very cute story as well. Arisu Endo getting her first victory here in that opening match. So overall, really a cool show. Loved the vibe of it all. Once again, TJPW, one of my favorite promotions just to follow because of the general feeling that I get from each of these shows. And also announced was that the karateka Yuria Nagano, 25 years old, will make her pro wrestling debut in Sumo Hall on TJPW Sumo Hall show on March 19. She has an incredible TikTok going with over 800,000 followers. And once again, TJPW, after Yuki Arai, found a competitor that is going to debut for them who is very, very popular outside of the wrestling bowl, which is a great deal.
Absolutely. I think that's great. You know, it's funny because her name is the source of much confusion among people. I've heard Yuria, yes. Juria, yep. Zuria.
On TJPW, they went by the last version that you named. I went with the translator version and by the version that I found on Google, actually.
Yeah, that seems like the most logical one. But either way, that's a fine pick for Tokyo Joshi Pro. And you saw with the Yuki Arai deal that they're doing clearly outside the ring stuff, even, you know, all the way back to these other people that they have on the roster, like Maki Ito, you know, they really love that kind of deal, that idol style that you could have tons of fans online, tons of publicity, you know, love that she's a karate player. Hopefully she can incorporate that into her wrestling decently. And I think that's a great signing. You know, hopefully it pays off for them. I know Arai was very popular as an idol too, so that was they've been making some good signings in Tokyo Joshi Pro. It's clear that Takagi has a vision for the promotion, and he just continues to add on and you know, regroup.
Yes, absolutely. So Dylan, the two main event matches, of course, Mio Yamashita defended her Prince of Princess Championship, the fourth defense in this reign that she's on against Mizuki, 19 minutes. These two matches, I mean, you could really argue which one of those was better. I saw some different opinions on Twitter. I thought that the main event was an absolutely outstanding match between Yamashita and Mizuki. Once again, Yamashita continues to be one of my favorite wrestlers, just from the way that she carries herself. The match against Mizuki, of course, was expected to be a great match, and it, in my opinion, totally delivered. I love this underdog spirit that Mizuki was going with. I specifically remember at the end of the match, she was at all costs trying to avoid the crash rabbit heat, the knee strike that Yamashita is doing, and she tried to hold on to Yamashita's foot in one instance in the end of the match and started crying, which, of course, emotionally draws you in as a fan. But Yamashita just had no remorse with her and just went through it with the crash rabbit heat. What did you think about this main event match?
Yeah, I thought, I mean, this was a good show, but to me, the main event stood like way above everything else. I thought this was a fantastic match, up there with any of the other matches that we've seen in any company so far this year. I thought they did a great job. Yamashita especially, I think, is so strong as a competitor, yes, as a, you know, her push and all that stuff, and how she carries herself as well. But her, like, to me, she is just at a clear next level to this entire roster, and they've done a great job of emphasizing that. Mizuki, great underdog babyface here. It showed some great fire. I thought their dynamics worked really well. And, you know, that's the one thing I will say about the two matches and some sort of similarities is I think that they work together very well in that their styles combine and mishmash very well. And I think Mizuki was a great opponent for Miyu here. I personally thought that Yamashita was definitely going to win this match going forward. I saw a lot of people very surprised that Mizuki lost, but to me, I was very much anticipating a Miyu win.
Yeah, I was not going to think that she was going to win the title here.
Yeah, and I was surprised by that, but I thought the work was awesome. Miyu just so great in how she methodically took down Mizuki. I thought early on they started off at a pretty measured pace for them, and then things really got popping off around, you know, even just a few minutes into it. And once they did, they kept shifting gears up until that final gear into a great climactic finish, I thought. I loved the spot where Mizuki did hit the cutie special.
Yes.
And then I couldn't bridge because she was too exhausted from...
That was awesome.
Yes.
Also, for the first time, I think since... Was it? I'm not sure. Was it first time since the Princess Cup or first time since the last Kurikun in November? I'm not sure. We also saw the Vortex Candy. That's the translation of it. The Usoame, this whirlwind crossbody that Mizuki does, that she really only uses in her big match situations. And it got a great pop from the crowd.
Yeah. You know, I think that these two... the Vortex Candy, as you called it, a wonderful name.
May also be called the Whirlwind Candy. I'm just...
Yeah, a lot of people call it Whirling Candy. Yeah. Like a lot of people online. Either way, Vortex sounds cooler to me.
I like it, yes.
Yeah, so it may be unofficial, but that's what I will call it right now. But that move, which is basically like she runs up and hits a crossbody, and she kind of catches her, but then she spins into like a full rotation into another crossbody in midair. I know it got a lot of pops online with the GIF culture going on Twitter that some companies do not like that much, I've heard out there. That's a topic we'll probably get into. But regardless, she was a great performer to go against Miyu's dominating style with the heavy kicks and just a style that I really love so much. With her, she comes across like, and I said this about Utami when we did our year-end show, and you could make some comparisons to even like Satomura back maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago, I feel like, where Yamashita comes across like the final boss of Tokyo Joshi Pro. The be-all, end-all, even just beating her would be a huge win for somebody, and she carries herself so great that I think she's like the perfect ace champion for the company.
She really is the ace of aces. When it comes, when you look at all the aces in Japanese pro wrestling and you compare them all, what they mean to their individual company and how they carry themselves in their company within the confines of the company, Yamashita, in my opinion, she's just the best.
Absolutely. Definitely the most dominating presence and the true top dog of the company. And I thought Mizuki was a great underdog to her as well. So I think that the dynamics in the match worked really well. Among the best of the year, I would say, in any match, right up there with all of the other great matches that we've seen. You know, there's been a lot of shows and there's been a lot of great matches that are worth watching. And I think this is right near the top of the heap on there. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a fantastic match. And really, you know, like I said, the show was good. For the most part, but I was kind of in the middle after this match. It was definitely a big thumbs up after the main event.
So I'm curious what you think about the International Princess match. In contrast to what we were used to see from Maki Ito, her being the underdog against, for example, her tag team partner, Miyu Yamashita, in the great match that they had at Wrestle Princess 2 last year. This time, and I guess going forward, that's going to be the thing for her. She was not the underdog anymore against Hikari Noah, but she was very dominant. She was, you can say, she was the top dog in that match. She was really dominant against Hikari Noah, bossing her around in the match. And then in the end, also getting the submission victory for her victory with the Ito Deluxe. 16 minutes for the International Princess in the co-main event. What did you think about the match?
Yeah, I liked this match too. I thought it was the second best match on the show. Although there was another match that nearly took that crown as well. We'll talk about it a little bit. But I thought this was a very strong match. And much like the main event, I like their styles, how they combine together. Because Ito, you know, we mentioned her as a wrestler, most improved candidate. I know I backed off a little bit of that because I think the character work has always been super strong with her. Mm-hmm. Her wrestling's now starting to catch up as well. But I think she always had something to the Tokyo Joshi Pro fans. I think she had something that resonated. And Noah is a fantastic in-ring performer. I think a better worker, so to speak, than Ito. But her character and charisma is not at the same level as Ito as a singles person, as we've seen with his title reign, which I was very excited about going into it. But I don't think it really lived up to expectations. I know we've talked about this before, going through her title reign. And I don't think it really lived up to what I wanted it to be. But she ended it in style against a great opponent. I thought they fit together really well. Their strengths balanced out. And their strengths and weaknesses balanced out each other. And I thought they came together to have a really good match. And like you said, from a character perspective, Ito taking that lead role, I think is great for her. And, you know, and a good continuation of where she went last year.
Yeah.
So I liked everything about this match. I thought it was good. I don't think the wrestling was on the same caliber as the main event, but in terms of a match, the best match on this show, pretty easily to that point. Like a legitimate recommendation for this match.
Yes, definitely. I'm looking forward to what is going to happen with the title now, too, because Maki Ito clearly stated that she wants to take the title to AEW. We're going to see if that opens up, if there's an opportunity that opens up for her going over once again to the U.S.
That's a great comeback story in and of itself.
Yeah.
Because her American run was not very well received at all. But now she's been able to really overcome all that and be somebody that's so good for her home promotion that I'm sure that is on her mind, that she wants another crack at America to try and rewrite some of those. That
would be great. Would be great, actually. So the other match that you were talking about, I guess, is the other singles match on that show. Is that correct?
It was a singles match, but it was not the Sakazaki.
Okay. You're talking about the New Year Tiger Child Rescue match. The thing that you had to do was you had to rescue a tiger baby to win the match. Shoko Nakajima defeated Hyper Misao.
I'm a huge fan of stuffed animals, particularly in wrestling. And they emphasize this in this match. So they've had this series for the last couple of years on January 4th, where Shoko and Misao would fight each other in a goofy match, and the winner would get to change the other person's gimmick. Like last year, we saw Shoko become a sidekick for Hyper Misao. And that same stipulation was on the line for this. But yes, it's a ladder match, but instead of a title, a contract, $1,000 or whatever, like it used to be 50 years ago, whenever the first ladder match started, it was a stuffed tiger animal here. And I have to say, this match was goofy. It's so ridiculous that I think that they impressed me, but I think it might have been better without it at the same time. With how violent this match got, with slamming each other on these dinosaur toys and kaiju toys, that looked incredibly painful for this ridiculous match that nobody took seriously. So I have to say that I was so impressed by their effort that I really, really enjoyed all of this. Like, as dumb as it is, and even the serious parts, I liked pretty much all of it. I like I said, I think in hindsight, this might be one of the few matches where they could have went softer and it would have been better. Because it was like so silly. You had Kiryu in there holding the ladder, you know, like climbing each other, climbing the ladder. There was the one-sided ladder deal with Misao did. It was just a crazy match that I think is totally like a great example of good comedy and something that you can, you know, you feel like you can only get in Tokyo Joshi Pro this level. Because a lot of promotions have comedy, even the more serious ones. But I think this one was so outlandish that I ended up enjoying it. And I liked this a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yes, this really was a lot of fun to watch. I definitely love Shoko Nakajima in these situations, in these match situations. I'm actually not really sure if she is this main event level performer that she's going to be, because after the main event, Mio Yamashita called her out to be her opponent for the Sumo show that they are going to do on March 19. I'm very sure, given that what we just said about Miyu Yamashita, that the match is going to be very good, at least. Just not that into Shoko as, like, as I said, as main event level talent. I don't know. How do you, what do you think about that?
I have two halves to what I'm going to say about this match. And I'm going to throw the first one to you, and then I'll kind of say my piece on the second half. Now that we know that this is the main event with Shoko going against Miyu, mm-hmm. how do you feel about the Miyu and Ito match from October? That was a very controversial, and that I think a lot of people thought that Ito would win, or maybe even had enough momentum to make it a big deal or whatever. How do you feel about that now? Because I said at the time, I think that they had lightning in a bottle and should have struck with Ito. But then we kind of went through it and said, oh, they have a big show in March. Maybe that could be the main event for that. And that's where Ito gets her big win. Instead, they've gone in a different direction at the end of the day with Ito winning the international title and now Shoko getting the title shot. So how do you feel about that?
Looking at it now, I still think that it ultimately was the right decision, and it is the right decision to have Ito have a quote-unquote secondary run now with the International Princess Championship, because I don't think that she was... I mean, yes, lightning in a bottle, yeah, of course. But I'm not sure if she was ready at that point in October already. So having another run of Miyu Yamashita is the logical thing to do, I thought. The thing about it is, though, where do you end it with Miyu Yamashita? I'm sure you have an opinion on that as well.
I personally think that you're not going to be able to replicate the heat that Ito had going into that match. It's going to be very, very hard to do something, to have that much momentum for the biggest show of your company's history. It's going to be tough, I feel like, to do that. I don't really sense that here for Shoko. However, I will say this. I love this main event and the symbolism behind it, with Shoko challenging, because it's the two that have been there from the very beginning. You know, mm-hmm. starting on the, you know, these weird DDT pre-shows in, you know, at wrestling on mats in bars, dingy bars somewhere. And, like, going from that to Sumo Hall, I think is a great story. And stylistically, I like them, like, just for, like I said, Ito winning is Dylan thinking what's best for the grand scheme of things. Dylan, the fan, wants to see Shoko and Miyu wrestle because I think their match will be amazing and better, personally, just in terms of a wrestling match. So I am very happy about this because you have a great storyline to set up the main event of Sumo Hall. That this is the one thing that actually makes that other one forgivable, because I still think, how are you going to get somebody up to that level that Ito was at to beat Yamashita? I think it's going to be very hard. So I'm so happy they did this, though, instead. As a fan, I'm actually much more pleased with the outcome seeing this. And they have a lot to play off of in terms of the history of the entire company, and along with the wrestlers themselves. So I think that everything about that is awesome, and I cannot wait for that match. So at the end of the day, I am happy with it. Although, I like I said, if I ran the company, I think I still would have had Ito win in October, just because I don't think you're going to be able to heat somebody up to the level that she was at on that particular moment. But regardless, I'm sure she'll have her chance eventually. But, you know, this match feels right for the company itself. We'll see how that definitely takes in terms of... I don't think you're going to get the buzz for that match as Ito challenging, though. I will say that, especially among Western fan base. I do think that buzz of that will be a little lackluster. I think a lot of people feel like you do about Shoko, that maybe she's not at that main event tier. Just as a star or whatever, because I think as a wrestler, she's really proven herself as a great worker and a very good stylistic counterpart to Miyu as well. I think the same reasons Mizuki worked so well against Miyu, I think Shoko could do the same thing, maybe even a little better. So I'm very interested in the match, and I think it was a good call. Like I said, at the end of the day, I like it, and hopefully it works out. I still feel that way a little bit about that October match, but I'm definitely less passionate about it. I can definitely see this argument for this as well. A lot better. So I like it. I like Shoko getting the main event spot, and I think it'll be a great match.
Still want to talk about the other singles match on that show a bit here. Yuka Sakazaki defeated Yuki Arai. I mentioned that before. Yuki Arai is really getting not a lot of singles matches, but important singles matches. And this one, given her experience level, she got a 13-minute singles match with a very experienced, in comparison, wrestler in Yuka Sakazaki. And I thought that Yuki Arai did this really well. I really liked her selling throughout the match, and I liked the exhaustion that she portrayed after she was beaten by Yuka Sakazaki. So the build-up that they are doing with Yuki Arai, I think, is really, really good. And with the big show coming up in Sumo Hall, I think that she will get another big opportunity against whoever is available for a singles match at that big show. So Yuki Arai doing good work in TJPW.
Yeah, her reasons for her push are obvious. Sure. Her popularity outside of wrestling. I have to say, so this was a good match, I thought, for what it was. But I really think Sakazaki, really carried Arai, in this match, to be honest with you. There are multiple spots I noticed, and maybe I'm just reading too deep into this, and I always try not to do this with DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro, but there were multiple moments, if you go back and watch the match, where Sakazaki had to get in, positions to make what they were doing work, and kind of work for both of them at once. So I was very impressed with Sakazaki, who's a tremendous performer, in my opinion, but really helped Arai a lot. She deserves a lot of credit in this match, I feel like, to make this what it was, because Arai was getting kind of lost out there a couple of times. I think she's still not ready, to be honest
with you. She's in deep waters, definitely.
Yeah, she's not ready for this push, but she's going to get it anyway. I mean, look, it's not like it's the first time. Just look at Kamatani in Stardom, a similar situation with the idol background gets pushed too fast. She's making it work now, and I'm sure Arai will get there as well in another year or two once she has more time. I think it's smart to push them this way. I think it might be in some ways better, especially for a company like Tokyo Joshi Pro. The fans aren't going to be super critical of the wrestling in this situation. So if she has a couple of, spots like this, it's not going to hurt her at all if she, needs some time to get ready. And then when she gets there, I mean, look, somewhat similar to Ito herself, somebody who struggled a lot early on and has improved as time has gone along and become a pretty good worker, all things considered, and a pretty good wrestler. And I think Arai will get there as well. But in this match, I thought she actually looked pretty rough. I thought Sakazaki really made it work, but she did such a great job that it ended up working out pretty much by the end of the day. So I really wanted to praise Sakazaki for her performance, and with Nodoka Oni-san coming back, because for a long time I only thought of Nodoka Tenma as Oni-san when I first to watched, because I watched back then. Same thing with her, where Sakazaki, a great performer, but I can't help but always think of Meal Clown when I think of her, looking back at the old days. That was her old gimmick. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with that these days, but a very fun gimmick, Meal Clown. So bring that back. That's what I want to see. But I love her as a wrestler too.
Really?
She deserves a lot of credit.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Overall, once again, a very fun Currican Hall show from TJPW. These shows, you really can't do anything wrong with that. The Currican Hall shows are always very fun to watch. So check this show out if you haven't seen it already. And on the other side of that promotion, I consider TJPW, of course, a part of the big DDT family. DDT themselves, they of course started the year once again with their Currican Hall show on January 3rd, like they do every year. And on that show particularly, I want to mention the Katsusada Higuchi versus Hideki Okatani match. I thought Hideki Okatani, I mentioned him as my rookie of the year. And you can also go with Tori Kojima and Yuya Koroku on the DDT as well, because they also got a great opportunity on the other show that they did on January 7. But here, Hideki Okatani had his assessment match for Eruption against Higuchi. And it was a great match, in my opinion. And the rating of 6.92, in my opinion, on Cage Match is very much too low for this one, because I thought that Okatani had a great performance against Higuchi. Higuchi was really trying to beat the ever-living crap out of Okatani, and in the end, with his Canadian backbreaker, with Sakaguchi coming into the ring and saying, "That's enough." I thought it was a great finish. They gave him his Eruption jacket afterwards. I really am high on Okatani, and I'm really high on the tag team that him and Higuchi are going to become, because the first match they had on January 7 was already very good. Very good chemistry between the two as tag team partners. So I'm looking forward to them in the tag league that we're going to talk about in a bit too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that this partnership with Okatani joining Eruption. Interesting that they had a fourth member there, trying to expand Eruption a little bit. There, good move for Okatani. I think it's interesting. You look at the, yeah, I think the DDT fan base is very interesting in general when you look at them. I mean, this show did a very nice number at Corcoran Hall too, so you can tell that they were into it. I think Takeshita is definitely, he was in the main event. I think he's definitely a big, like, good person to be the ace of the company as a business guy. I think the fans will gravitate towards his stuff going in there. I think it's interesting if you look at the cage match. The Pokatan match was the highest rated, more than Takeshita and Aoki, or the Higuchi and Okatani match. The Brooks and Pokatan match was the one that made the biggest impact among the fans. So this show had a little bit of everything on it.
Yeah, it really had. It was a fun show. Chris Brooks, really on a great run earlier this year, had a very fun hardcore match with Suzuki on the Gaki no Fuchi show. Then the match with Pokotan the day before. Then also on the DDT Free show, had a match with Yoshihiko and a match with Hagane Shino on the Ganbare Pro Indie Wrestling Summit. So hot run for Chris Brooks early this year.
He's a guy that I thought really deserved some most improved votes for last year. I think he's really stepped up his game recently and continues it. And again, much like stuffed animals, I also enjoy mascot wrestlers like Andre the Giant Panda and Pokatan. I can always
really brutalizing Yoshihiko and Pokatan with double foot stomps from the top right into their faces. So don't do that, Chris.
Oh, heat! Yeah. I feel here, but you know, great. Great performance there for a comedy match. You had the big guys facing off. And Takeshita and Aoki had a more technical match in the main event.
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought about the match. To me, I liked the match for what it was, of course. It came to me a little bit strange as a standalone main event in for a Corcoran Hall show that DDT does. Was it like just to highlight that Konosuke Takeshita can do basically everything, or what did you take away from this?
That's kind of Takeshita's thing, is that look at this roster. There are so many different styles of people here that could go against him, and he's kind of dealt with that his entire career in DDT. And they've had matches before with Aoki and Takeshita. So, this match was pretty much played into Aoki's strengths as well. They went to the time limit draw here, which I thought was interesting because Takeshita is the champion right now. You would have thought that just look at how things play out. He's always booked really strongly. So to have Aoki go to the limit with him, I thought was a very good deal. It had a unique feel to it in DDT. I thought it was a good match overall. Maybe, and for me, I like too that they had this because it was really very much a mat-based match here. It's something a little bit different than you see in other companies. Like the Higuchi and Okatani match is very good, but you can see big guys fight each other in every company, it feels like. The technical style, I feel, is much more less represented across the spectrum outside of, when they have those UWF matches in great. So you got to see something unique in DDT here. All the styles were represented pretty fairly, and I liked it. I wouldn't say it was a great, great match, but I thought it was a good main event overall.
Yeah, I would say the same about that match. On that show as well, we saw Naomi Yoshimura and Harashima, the tag team champions on that, still until that day, on opposing teams. Naomi Yoshimura teamed with Tetsuya Endo and Harashima teamed with Mao. And afterwards, we learned that Yoshimura and Harashima are forfeiting the KOD tag team title because they will have their DDT Ultimate Tag League. And they announced the following teams for that tournament, and the winners of the tournament will become the new KOD Tag Team Champions. So once again, Harashima and Naomi Yoshimura are in the league. Then we got Konosuke Takeshita and Yuki Ueno, Shunma Katsumata and Mao, Tetsuya Endo and Jun Akiyama, Chris Brooks and Masahiro Takanashi, Daisuke Sasaki and MJ Paul, Yuji Hino and Yuki Onaya, Katsusada Higuchi and Hideki Okatani, Shuji Kondo and Katsuki Hirata, as well as Dancho Kodino and Yuki Ino. And this one is also split into two blocks. And the two blocks are as followed. We got Takeshita and Ueno, Endo and Akiyama, Higuchi and Okatani, Hino and Naya, as well as Kondo and Hirata in block A, and Harashima and Yoshimura, Chris Brooks, and Takanashi, Sasaki, and Paul, Katsumata, and Mao, and the Pheromones team in Block B. So, looking at it, Dylan, who is your favorite to win this one?
You know, thinking about it, I want to see Kondo and Hirata win.
Would be awesome.
That's the team I'm pegging for this. I plus, you know, it's such a random team. What I really want, never mind all that, what I really want is for this to lead to Magnum Tokyo.
Finally!
So somehow. That's what we need most, I like to think, at the end of the day. Looking at the lineups here, the blocks,
yep.
You know, you look at it, you have Takeshita and Ueno, I think, have to be up there. Endo and Akiyama, I think, are the team that I think would win, because it sets up Endo, or even Akiyama, if you want, facing off against Takeshita for the title, and I think that's the one that makes the most sense.
Wasn't it already announced that Endo is challenging Takeshita next? I think it was.
Yeah, there you go then. They skipped the middleman, pretty much.
Yeah,
Endo makes the sense to solidify Burning as a stable as well.
Makes total sense, of course, yes. The final day of that tag league, the tag league is starting on January 30 and finishing on February 27. Block A has Takeshita and Ueno versus Endo and Akiyama on the final day. And Block B, I think, is a little bit more up in the air with the matches that are happening on that night. Chris Brooks and Takanashi, Shunma Katsumata and Mao, and Harashima and Yoshimura versus the Pheromones team. So could be Burning versus Harashima and Yoshimura in the final, with Burning winning then. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, that would be my prediction. Looking at the final night, you always got to look to the final night. That's the trick of looking at these block play tournaments. But yeah, I think Harashima and Yoshimura will make the final because they gave up the title. Very much an All Japan type of deal, too, like they used to do in the old World's Strongest Determination League that they would have there. You know, they did the same thing there. So I think that's a very much an All Japan deal, and it makes sense for Akiyama to be there. And Hiroshima and Yoshimura were the champions, so it makes sense for them to be in the final as well. It seems like it lines up.
Yes, it absolutely does. So I guess that's it for that. Oh, no. On that Kurikan Hall show, of course, Maya Yuki made not her debut for DDT, but basically, is she going to, I guess she's going to be a regular performer for DDT. We've talked about that on our last show, that there was this Tokyo Sports article that said that DDT wants to sign Yuki, Maya Yuki. And on the January 7th show, she had another match, and she also stated that she was jealous of Saki Akai being signed to DDT, and she was rejected when she wanted to join DDT years ago. So I guess the story is very clear that she's going to be one of those wrestlers that is going to be focused on for the women's side of things at DDT.
Why not? She's a fantastic talent. Star presence is super high with her. So, like I said, I couldn't imagine anyone better to go after than her. If I ran any kind of company that featured women's wrestling, I would do everything in my power to sign her. I think she's an awesome talent, and just everything about her is great.
What do you think about DDT in general, like opening up more to Yoshi? I mean, they had once again, last year too, they had the Gakano Fuchi show on their service. Prominence, the stable that split with Ice Ribbon, was on that show very prominently positioned. And I can see the wrestlers from Prominence being used more in DDT this year. Gunbare Pro also has signed a number of female wrestlers. So DDT, as we said on our last show, Wrestle Universe, Cyber Agent, probably one of the strongest competitors for Stardom, like just given the market power they have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're probably the definitive number two right now, and they're going to do everything they can to parlay the success of Wrestle Universe and everything going on with that into maybe something even a little bit bigger for all across the streaming service, whether it's Tokyo Joshi Pro, DDT, Gonbari, Prominence, now getting a spot on there. Hell, even 0-1, if they continue to be on there, has featured Joshi talents in the past. So why not? Like, have them all over the place there. If Noah ever brings back Shim, then we saw Joshi wow. Towns appear there too. if they bring back the pink rings, I used to love those shows. Kana was on a lot of those as well. But I was a big fan of Shim back in the day. So bring it back. And let every company have Joshi talent on it.
Yeah, that is definitely very interesting to focus on this year. What is going to happen with Prominence, as well as Maya Yuki. Otherwise, in DDT as well, on that January 7 show, there was a great, great main event. And I really think that this is going to be one of those stories that is going to be the hook for 2022, Sana Kamina, Konosuke Takeshita, Toi Kojima, and Yuki Ueno faced off against Burning, Jun Akiyama, Tetsuya Endo, and Yuya Kuroku, with a heavy focus on Kuroku and Toi Kojima. Both guys have joined stables now, as well as Okatani joining Eruption. We have these guys, these generational rivals joining stables, and I thought it was a great, great match. Jun Akiyama and Tetsuya Endo really did everything to highlight Yuya Kuroku in that match with his new blue gear, looking awesome there. Toi Kojima did a great job as well. All the sequences that were there in this match were great. Jun Akiyama and Ueno once again faced off. I'm sure you were a big fan of that as well. 24 minutes. This match can fly under the radar because it's just a small show that it in Shinjuku face, but really check this one out. It only has two ratings right now on Cagematch, but they are both 8.0 ratings, so great match.
Yeah, I'll make sure to check it out. This kind of slipped through the cracks for me with everything going on here, but it looks like a fine match to watch. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yes, so anything else on DDT, Dylan?
Just excited to see the tag league, what they can do with that. Looks like a solid lineup for the most part, and hopefully they continue to do good with this Takeshita title reign. I think things are going good so far. We'll see more when there are bigger shows to talk about.
The most important question, of course, is will the tag league be reviewed on the Patreon?
Yeah, I'll do it. Like I said, why not? At the end of the day, I do have something going on in about a couple weeks from now, so I might take a few days break. I might do one of those things, like the New Japan Tag League, where I had to combine a bunch of shows.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm looking at this lineup, that should not be very hard to follow. Actually, let me actually verify that. Yeah, the first show has four matches. Then we got two or three matches on each show up until the final, that it once again has four block matches. So that should be easy to follow.
Looking forward to it, however it plays out.
Pro Wrestling Noah, of course, also ran shows early this year, and they are one of the busiest companies. We talked about this N Innovation deal that they have going on, where they ran Yokohama Radiant Hall two times already and are going to run it for a third time, two for this U-Cup thing. And after Budokan Hall, they also ran Kurikan Hall two times. First time for the New Sunrise, drawing 405 fans. I think this was going up against Wrestle Kingdom. And on January 5, they had their reboot mystery show, drawing 373 fans. And this got me thinking, Dylan, Noah is really running a lot of shows early this year. And looking at Wrestle Kingdom 2, we had some attendances fall a little bit this year. Do you think that we have reached the peak of shows being promoted in the first week of the new year? Or do you think there will be other promotions joining New Japan and Noah to run more bigger shows and even more shows early next year?
I don't know about bigger, but I definitely think there will be more as more
bigger big shows, maybe.
Yeah. Even still, I think that there will be companies that try to latch on to this. When it comes to like a great, if they can things play out to where they could get a little bit bigger, they'll try. But otherwise, I just don't think there are that many promotions that aren't already running shows, pretty much. It's like, it feels like everybody of note already is doing that, whether it's Big Japan, DDT, All Japan. Like, this is a traditionally big time for everybody, so I think it'll stay very similar to how it is now.
I do think with a new... I think it's going to be a new tradition. They announced the return date for January 1st next year already. Noah is going to run Budokan again. With this new tradition, it's going to be very hard for other promotions to like find a place early in the year for a similarly big show. It's hard for fans to make choices now, I think, because the ticket prices, of course, are really high. And imagine you being a Noah fan, you have the choice to go to 5 shows within 10 days. Which shows do you really choose? I mean, of course, you chose Budokan. And what else do you choose? Do you choose the first one? Do you choose the reboot show? It is really tough. And then there are other shows, Kurken Hall. On the first 5 to 6 days of the year, there are 2 promotions running on each day. It's really difficult for fans to make choices. And this year, with foreigners not coming into the country, it was very hard for promotions to really, to draw, really, I think. And you could see it, I think, on this reboot show. I think if you had people from America, from Europe in the country, these Noah shows would have done better, I think. So, I think
you're talking about the fans, not necessarily the wrestler. People flying in.
Exactly. So I think that's going to be very difficult next year for promotions to follow up on what they are doing this year. It's going to be interesting what next year brings. If the pandemic will be over, then things look, I think, better for Japanese wrestling promotions. Otherwise, I really don't think there is much more way to expand than what they are already doing.
Yeah, like I said, pretty much everybody's already doing stuff. Yes. So I think the biggest will be with the first year without the restrictions and the rules and all that stuff. Like, whenever that happens for the first week of the year, is going to be as big as it gets, I think, because everybody will be trying to hop onto that when that happens. But even then, I think long-term, just running the fourth is not a smart idea, in my opinion. It's, Wrestle Kingdom's there, you've got the Tokyo Joshi Pro Show there, you're fighting niches, you're fighting the big time. I mean,
it's not only that, DDT is... Big Japan is also running on January 4 and 5 in Shinkiba First Ring, that is. So there is tons of stuff going head-to-head on these 2 days of the year, and it's really difficult.
Yeah, like I said, it's just too much stuff, niche products and the big show.
Too much stuff is a very good topic, Dylan. Let us move on to the big one here that we have. Wrestle Kingdom 16 in Tokyo Dome, of course. Only the first 2 days of Wrestle Kingdom we're going to talk about on this show. The first night of Wrestle Kingdom drew a crowd of 12,047 fans to the Tokyo Dome, while the second night drew almost half of it with 6,379 fans. And if we want to talk about the grand scheme of things, I think it is very obvious that, first of all, January 4, that is just New Japan's day. People will come to the Tokyo Dome, not really regardless of what they put on, but it is very clear to me that January 4, Itaewon, is a big, big part of the drawing power of New Japan Pro Wrestling on that day. Another big part of the drawing power of this show is the clear main event. And we've seen that 2 years in a row now. And I'm really not sure if they are learning from that, because they did it again this year. The main event of night 2 being up in the air with the world title situation, I think is really a problem. It has historically proven that fans really want to know what the main event of the show that they're going to buy tickets for is going to be. We talked about that with all the other companies running stuff. You want to know what your money is going to be invested in. There is so much other stuff going on that I think that you have to tell the people what the main event is going to be. And We've seen that. The option was here Okada or Shingo versus Will Ospreay, and people, I think, wanted to know what the real match was going to be. So I really think that they really should go back to only running January 4 for Wrestle Kingdom, but I'm not thinking that is going to happen. So what did you take away from these two numbers?
And not only just this year, not even just 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And the before the pandemic happened, the show where they had their supposed biggest moment that they could have, their biggest win, Naito winning the title at the Tokyo Dome, did 10,000 less people than the first show. And we saw it the second year, again, dropping around 5,000 fans. This year, dropping around 6,000 fans. It's like you're split, you're cutting yourself off every time on the 5th. And it's just, like you said, January 4th is the day. Like, that's the day everyone wants to go to see New Japan at the Dome. It's special. It has history. It's, you know, it is what it is. The 5th show just doesn't have that cachet to do a Tokyo Dome show in it. I'm very much convinced of that. Will it stop? I don't think so either.
No.
You know, nothing in their history suggests that that is what happened.
The thing about it is, Dylan, I'm absolutely certain that they have already booked the Tokyo Dome next year for both dates once again. And they will just continue doing it until, well, until what? They've announced a lot of big shows this year. And we've seen last year that they have had trouble breaking even for some of the Kurikan Hall shows too. And I do think that they just want to prove that they are the top dog in Japan still with running all these big shows. But looking at these two shows, I mean, of course, from the market share view, there is no question that New Japan Pro Wrestling is still the biggest company. But when I remember how excited I used to be for Wrestle Kingdom, and this is a feeling that I got from a lot of fans on Twitter, and I got from a lot of fans that I talked about Wrestle Kingdom with, the excitement that there used to be for Wrestle Kingdom is really long gone.
And I think that's the chickens coming home to roost so much that has led to this point. It wasn't like it just fell out of favor automatically. A lot had to happen to really beat them down and kill their interest in this show and really take it down from where it was. But I think the most important thing is, you know, and I said this on the Patreon show, and I wanted to talk about it here. You look at this card. There are wrestlers on this card that don't put any effort in. That's something I noticed, and we talked about the Noah show last episode. Never once did I feel that that was the case on that Noah show, where I felt like people were just going through the motions, trying to do it. And something like, I don't know if you wanted to talk about this match in full, but I'll just mention it. Yo versus Sho, this grudge match, built on years and years of rivalry and hatred. And even with all the show, the House of Torture stuff, just watching them wrestle, there was no heat between these two guys. They were going through the motions. Like, this should have been a huge match, but instead they were acting like it was a nothing chump match, which, you know, it kind of was when you look at where Yo was and House of Torture. You know what's coming with that. But still, that this should have been a heated blood feud type of deal.
And such a great moment for these two.
Yeah, this is what they've been wanting for all these years, wanting to break up and get their own finally. And you're getting a Tokyo Dome singles match, which means something. Even in this crazy like world, it means something to be in a singles match at the Dome.
It was a fine match, but is that really what you want out of that big Tokyo Dome opportunity that you get?
Yeah, it has a 5.14 rating on 143 votes. I thought it was below average.
It was very generous, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I think that even that, like I said, there was nothing about that match. Total failure on their parts. And like I said, you can't just blame the booking. You have to blame the wrestlers when you're not putting in effort. That's one of the worst things you can say about someone, in my opinion, as a commentator or whatever. That would be the last thing I would want to hear as a wrestler, is that you didn't try. I never got told that, and I never would have. And I can't believe somebody at the Dome, not just them. You look at the entire first half of this show.
This first half, I was really, really angry at this first half of the show. I thought it was the worst first half of a Tokyo Dome show I can remember. These two six-man tag matches that followed, I have no idea why these matches are on a Wrestle Kingdom card, other than, of course, yes, these guys probably should be in a match. Of course, yeah, okay. But these two matches were just an entire big waste of time. And it's time that I'm never going to get back. When I'm thinking about the biggest show of the year, I want the biggest matches of the year. And I don't want Kurikun mid-card level main event matches. They did a tour just before the Tokyo Dome. And they did similar matches on that tour. And these matches, they should have just taken place in Kurikun Hall, and that is it. That's the build that you need for Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, nobody was buying a ticket for the January 5 show because of what Kenta and Tanahashi did to each other in this six-man tag match. And nobody was buying a ticket for January 5 because of what the Empire for Will Ospreay did in the six-man tag after that. Completely useless.
Absolutely. Like I said, there was no passion from any of these guys. And some of them had a better match on the January 5th show, but there was no passion from any of these guys. The only time we saw that was when Tanahashi went crazy, with the kendo stick and all that. That was like the only heated moment on the first half of the show, you know. And I think a big problem with all this, and this is something we mentioned too on the Noah show, and I definitely think it stood out big here. That show, Noah, felt like a huge deal between the effort, the production, and all of that. This show isn't even close to the Wrestle Kingdoms we've had in the past. No real celebrity involvement, you know, no band coming out to play, like nothing like that, great stage. Like, there was nothing special about this whole deal to make it feel like this was Wrestle Kingdom, the biggest event of the year, and, you know, one of the biggest shows in the world in wrestling, not just in New Japan, not even just in Japan. They didn't put the effort in to make this special. The set was not at the level of past years, in my opinion, to be honest with you. You didn't have the vibe of it all. Obviously, the crowd, you can point the finger at that, but it's not just that. It's the production, the wrestlers, the booking, all of it. Like, it all came together to make this show feel like it's not that special. And like, and Wrestle Kingdom should never feel like that. Like I said, even in WWE, WrestleMania, I'm sure there's going to be some crazy booking there too and some dumb stuff on that show. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you, if you watch WrestleMania, it's going to feel like a WrestleMania show. Like, it's going to feel like a big deal from the production, from the spectacle of it all, and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to see the wrestlers that they have there, whoever that they don't fire between now and WrestleMania. Whoever they have will put their heart into that show. And I didn't get that from a lot of it. Even in the second half, I thought there was a match that kind of let me down on that thread. But regardless, I just think a lot of it, you know, we can talk about the matches in and out, but the overall grand scheme of things is this show just didn't feel special like a Wrestle Kingdom should.
I don't really think we need to get into each of these matches in detail, really. I just want to mention that except for this horrendous first half, we also have the lowest rated Tomohiro Ishii match of all time on this show, and well-deserved so, I think.
Even still, it's too high.
It has a rating of 1.97, and I really think we shouldn't talk about that. This rating is still too high. I think it is very appropriate right now. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything else, and that is the crazy part about it. I knew what I was in for, and I got exactly that, and I was still disappointed.
What a shame. Like, Ishii's one big match at the Tokyo Dome, big singles match, and this is what he gets. A crazy match versus Evil that sucked and that nobody liked. Everyone hated it, and deservingly so at the end of the day. Like you said, what can you say about it? You knew what it was going to be. We still got it. But ultimately, what a shame, because Ishii in a singles match could have been a huge deal and something that stole the show and was a classic match, but instead we got this.
I was thinking about how he felt about this match. I mean, sure, it's his job and he did his job. That's fine. But come on, man. How are you supposed to go through with this crap booking of the House of Torture if you're Tomohiro Ishii? You must be dreading this, right?
And then they went even further than usual because everybody interfered in this match. They had the whole group come in this time. So it wasn't just one Yo came out. You know, they had pretty much everybody. So this was the grand masterpiece here for Evil and House of Torture. Everyone got involved, and they made the worst match that you could have with Tomohiro Ishii. Every Yano match was better than this that Ishii had. Every single one. There, it was more serious on top of it. Somehow, just a total disgrace on there. And he—if anybody, you know, mailed it in—he's the one person that has an excuse on this show.
Yes, somebody, Dylan, who did not mail it in was Katsuyori Shibata, coming out to his match that was supposed to be in the first place. It was announced as a grappling match. And it turned out that Katsuyori Shibata took the mic and said that this match is going to be a regular singles match against his trainee, Renarita. Then they had a regular singles match, and we saw that Katsuyori Shibata, his movement is still 100% on point, just like it was before he went away in 2017. He is still as crisp as he used to be. His movement is amazing. His precision is still amazing. His strikes are amazing. Renarita was a great opponent for his comeback. It was great for Renarita to have this opportunity to be in the ring in a singles match in his return. Shibata being his trainer, you can clearly see not only from his movement, not only from his strikes, but also from just the visual, how he looks. You could see it. I said it on Twitter. I wasn't really sure about this one. It felt to me it was hard to watch a Katsuyori Shibata match, a regular Katsuyori Shibata match. I retweeted on the day that it happened. I retweeted a lot of the blog entries that I translated in 2017 when Shibata talked about his injury and how close he came to death, really. So it took for me a couple of minutes to really get into the match and to really feel the match. But ultimately, I was so happy that Shibata is just back doing what he loves. And that is, in the end, that is what it's all about. How did you feel about this?
I thought this was the highlight of night one, to be honest with you. This was my favorite match on the show. I loved seeing Narita get the spot against Shibata. I think I've always thought, even when he was a young lion, I thought he was special as a young lion, just in terms of a wrestler. I don't know. You can't really predict who's going to be a star because he could come back and have a Master Wato or something like that, you know, and ruin everything about him. And he never gets over to where he should be. But as a wrestler, I think before he left, he was one of the top 10 workers in New Japan. And to see him now come back after the training, after his time away, I think this guy is going to kick ass and have a great run, be somebody that you can do a lot with. I don't want to make predictions on who's going to be a star and who's going to get over. But I think as a wrestler, he's the best young lion they've had in many, 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 many years. I think he's a fantastic performer. We saw it again here. I love Shibata coming in there. They did a lot of work with the leg. They did this angle beforehand because they still announced it as a catch match before the show, but then he was like, I changed my mind, it'll be a regular match now.
I don't know how you think about this, but once I watched it with English commentary, shout out to Kevin Kelly, Chris Charlton, they said on commentary Shibata is going into business for himself, and as soon as they said it, there was this red flag waving that clearly this had to be the plan from the beginning. But we've also read it in the Wrestling Observer that Dave Meltzer reported that Katsuyori Shibata went into business for himself and people were freaking out backstage. But to be quite honest, I really can't buy that.
There's no chance that's true. Like a company big of New Japan, like as big as New Japan, would not allow that to happen, especially if there was any kind of worry that they've had or whatever over. Because he's wanted to do this for some time now, and they held off on it for as long as they could, pretty much. So if there was this concern from them, they're not just going to let somebody go out there and just go into business for themselves. I mean, that's completely ridiculous.
Why would the ref do that?
Meltzer said that for real. Like that wasn't like some joke he made, because sometimes he gets, you know, made fun of and stuff gets taken out of context, but sometimes he does say some stuff that I can't really get behind. But I can't believe he fell for that, because there's no way that would have happened. And you're not just going to run somebody out there and then Narita, oh, I know we promised you this catch match, but oh, now you have your turn's going to be in this unforeseen circumstance. Like that's no. Like you said, this was absolutely the plan. I wouldn't be surprised if Narita himself was the plan from the beginning of being his opponent. But yes, definitely don't buy into that he just went into business for himself. There's no way. But regardless, I thought it was cool though. Like regardless, I think it's still cool that they gave him an angle on this show, because it plants the seeds of what's to come. And personally, I think that he is going to be back full force within the year, and maybe sooner than anybody thinks.
I think he's going to be in the New Japan Cup.
New Japan Cup, I could see them holding off for G1, not because of health reason, but just for promotional purposes.
Yes.
Because I think that would mean a lot more for him to come then. But I think he's being in the G1 this year.
As we said on our last show, he's really missed the G1. Or on the UN Awards show, we said that.
Yeah.
With all the moments that he has created on G1 Climax Finals. That would be a huge announcement. Yes.
Absolutely. I absolutely think that's going to happen. I think that he, you know, I mean, I don't think he has to be cleared by a doctor. You know, that's what I always say. You know, if you're cleared.
That has to be already happening.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're cleared, it's not going to be like, you're cleared, but there's like, you know.
You can only do this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like cleared is cleared. It's like with Bryan Danielson. You know, like, because a lot of people had the same reaction when he came back, you know, it's like, so I wasn't really worried or anything like that. I figured that they would do a smart match here anyway, just to kind of wean him back in. Even if the risk is minimalized, I think just naturally he might think, oh, it might be better to, you know, straddle the water, so to speak. You know, you wade your way in, you dip your toe into the water, so to speak. Yeah. And they did that with the exhibition match with Zach, and I thought this was the conditional next step. And I think sooner rather than later, I think he will be back full force and the Shibata that we always knew. Because as you said, he looked basically the same as when he left, you know, his movement and everything. But I really loved the match. I thought it was fantastic. I thought Narita sold really well. He deserves a lot of credit. I know everybody will go for Shibata, being this was his big moment. But I think Narita looked fantastic in this match as his opponent. Selling, really making Shibata look as dangerous and great as he always is seen as in New Japan. This was a good stuff. I think in hindsight, I wonder if my only downside to all this was, I love Ren Narita. I was very happy that he came back. I think it would have been better in hindsight to just announce him, because when you say it's the mystery opponent, people are thinking of like big stars and stuff like that, you know, like dream matches and all that crap.
True.
I think it would have been better just to announce Narita, because I think people could get into that story, the teacher versus the student. To have it as a mystery guy, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be this guy that's like a huge name, and then it's like, oh, it's just Narita, who's a great wrestler but not a star. So I think that they would that would be the one thing I would have changed. I would have had him announce Narita right away as his chosen opponent.
I know why you're saying that, and we've discussed possible opponents for Shibata too. But how great was it for Ren Narita that people online didn't react disappointedly? And they reacted to this announcement as, oh, cool, Ren Narita. That is great for a guy of his standing. So, I mean, I see where you're coming from, and maybe they could have announced that.
I saw a lot of people disappointed that it wasn't Ibushi.
Then I'm in the wrong. Oh, no, I'm not in the wrong bubble. I'm in the right bubble.
yeah, you're well, no. There's, like, I mean, it's not like people are like, "Oh, this bum." It was more like, "Oh man, I thought it was going to be Ibushi." or like Sakuraba, or somebody like that. You know, a lot of people were speculating guys like that on there, but I don't think they were disappointed because he's a great wrestler. At the end of the day, it's like, you're going to be disappointed it's not so-and-so, but then you're going to realize, oh, like, he's great. Just look at the, I mean, look even on some of the reviews at Cage Match, they're saying very similar things to that on some of the reviews, but most of them are just talking about how great this match was because it was a great match. And yes. Naruto's a great worker, so I wasn't disappointed at all. Let me make that clear. I'm just saying, I do think that ultimately a lot of people, like, when I saw people predict this match, nobody really was really saying Narita until, like, the day of. I think a lot of people started to put that together. But all the prognostications were of somebody like an Ibushi or even Kazuyuki Fujita, which would have been very funny if that had been there.
No, but way.
Yes, but I didn't say that, and I would never have said that. But just some people I saw.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, yes, which was very funny, as I said. But I love what we got. Like I said, it's not a big complaint. Like I said, because at the end of the day, even if you thought, oh man, I wish it was Ibushi, you saw this match, you realize it's about Shibata, and it was awesome. So there's nothing to get upset about. But that's just a mild tweak I would give. But it was a great match. I loved it. It was my favorite part of the whole show.
Yes, it really was cool. It was a great moment, great match, great vibe. Then got a quick intermission before the NEVER Openweight title match. We already talked about that one. Then we got two other title matches, the IWGP Tag Team title. Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi finally did it. They defeated Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. Taichi really had some nice words for Yoshihashi after the match, complimenting him on his victory. It was a great moment for Yoshihashi to finally win his first IWGP title. Last year, he won the NEVER Openweight 6-man tag team title, of course, but now he is an IWGP heavyweight tag team champion, which is great for him. I thought him and Goto, we talked about them in our year-end awards. Great tag team. Very cool that they are now the champions. Dangerous Takers had a nice little run for them in their second reign. But Goto and Yoshihashi should really be the tag team champions for a lengthy run because they really have this great energy. I'm not very optimistic on that, though, given the history of the tag team title changes in Wrestle Kingdom. So I like that one. Desperado and Hiromu Takahashi I also liked. I especially came away being very happy that El Desperado defended his championship. This match was very different than the matches they had before. This one was basically a match to end it all, to finalize their story. They went all out from the very beginning, and they just kept going full throttle until the very end, until Desperado finally put Hiromu Takahashi away in 16 minutes. So what did you take away from these two matches?
Yeah, you know, I think all four of the main matches on the show, I had at similar ratings. Mm-hmm. You know, if I would just do star ratings, they'd all be about the same. I think the tag match overachieved, when it came to... and I will say, I thought their match, just as a match, was better in the tag league that they had. I thought that was a tremendous match, and this had a bigger moment attached to it, which was also very good. They broke out some new stuff. Yoshihashi brought out the flip pile driver. He's done that before, but saved it for the big matches. He did that. I like the idea of putting Yoshihashi and Taichi as like the focus of the match, because it was a bigger moment for them of the two teams. So I love that. But Goto and Zack had some great... I love the counter back and forth with like the Goto Shiki and then to the European Clutch. Both men going back and forth on that. I was very impressed by what they brought to the table. I thought it was a really strong match. At the moment, here's the thing about this. We know that, really for both of them, like the junior and the tag titles, the title doesn't really mean that much. Mm. At the end of the day. But Yoshihashi, the benefit of him being such, jobbed out so much over the years pretty much, is that everything he does, even like the six-man titles, that felt like him winning those six-man titles. And these tag titles felt like for him, that was as good as winning the IWGP title, pretty much. Because he's been booked so poorly, that him getting big moments and things like this actually feel very special to him, and you can buy it as real. Like, hey, nobody ever thought this guy would do anything, but here he is winning the titles on a Tokyo Dome show. That's really an important moment for him. The junior match was also very good. Much more like this style isn't my favorite anyway, to be honest with you. It's a spot fest style is really what this match was ultimately. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a place for that. Obviously, Hiromu, him and Dragon Lee was famous for that. I think that Desperado would have been better if they had a more complete match, similar to their big match, the junior final, junior tournament final. This really isn't his style, really, either. But I thought he worked well in the match. It was good. You know, I don't think it compares to the first match, but it was a good match. And Desperado getting the win, that's a big deal. It's hard for me to really... Like, look, at the end of the day, his next defense is against Master Watto. Like, it's hard for me to really say this is all great for him, you know, type of deal. It's like
the next title... one could be against a Lindemann.
Yeah, what happened to that? Like, he said Lindemann after his promo, or in his promo, and then they gave him Watto instead.
Well, Watto pinned him on the next show.
Yeah, but his promo was about Lindemann after the first show.
Yes. We'll see about that. That would really require Lindemann to have a match in New Japan first, I guess, to be introduced to the crowd before he's going to challenge Desperado. But Aki, I see where you're coming from there.
Yeah, in general, I thought this match ultimately, like, they are so gifted and talented that they were able to do this. But this match, they didn't make this match feel special, in my opinion, the way the tag match did. This is another match where I thought that the effort wasn't there on a mental level. Like, they did their spots really well, but I think this match could have been a lot better. Like, with these guys being so talented, and we've seen it before in the past. They chose to eschew that for basically, you know, they did enough. But I don't think this was any kind of, like, this wasn't what it could have been. I feel like
this was not great. It wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. This wasn't a great match at the end of the day. And I feel like that's, you have to point the finger at them for this because they had the opportunity to do that. Instead, shows this way. And I was kind of disappointed with it, but I'm not going to hate on it too much because it was a really good match at the end. Like, the floor for a Hiromu Dome match is very high at the end of the day. So it's like, even if they, you know, even they just sleptwalked through it, they would still be able to have a pretty strong match. And I think they accomplished that. And like you said, for Desperado, I'm sure it does mean something. He came out in the all white attire. You know, he looked like a superstar with just his look. Hiromu came out with a, now, can I just say something? We passed over this. That Empire LIJ match had to be the worst match of the year in terms of fashion sense on the intros. What was Ospreay wearing?
The discount pheromones.
Yeah, even worse. Like you said, even worse than the pheromones. Naito looked horrendous with his jacket. I mean, this was a terrible match in terms of just a fashion at the end of the day. So I have to point that out. So Desperado and Hiromu, they did win on that level. They looked like stars, at least. So I'll take what I get.
And the match was like good. Freaking stars. That's it.
The match was good, but I hope that, you know, next go around, they can really pull something special out, you know, and because I think that they're both capable of it. You know, we've seen matches before where Desperado, the first match, obviously, but even Desperado versus Eagles, Hiromu, and many matches looked special and great. Yeah. And I wish that we could have seen that here. But I think the show needed it because at the end of the day, with all, like, the matches, like we're talking about, the Shibata match, the tag titles, the junior, the main event, these are all good matches. But this show felt like it was dying as this junior match was going on at the same time because it just didn't feel special at all. And like, they needed that big match that you can point to, I feel like.
The rating of 6.20 on Cage Match, I think, is very generous for this show.
Yeah.
I was dreading the first half, and even though they had some good matches for the main events, that didn't cover up for what happened in the first half, in my opinion.
And just the overall feel of the show was the biggest flaw of all of this, more than anything else.
It really was. I agree with you. And when we talk about the main event, kind of bridging to the second show, of course, too, Katsuhiko Okada came out with this robe that he had, where he had the entire history of New Japan Pro Wrestling written on the robe. And the entire idea of this match was that that was the entire idea, as it turned out, of him being the unofficial IWGP heavyweight champion of the fourth generation.
Not to interrupt you, but we saw him in the opening video. This was a very Inoki-esque look he had on here.
Inoki too.
Yeah, this was like, they're teasing something there. I don't know what it was that they're going for, but he came out with this robe, which I thought he looked great in it. The Inoki robe looked very like legendary and powerful and all that crap. But I thought that was interesting. They chose to go there, so to speak, because they're kind of hesitant to mention Inoki most of the time.
Usually they are, but here the entire idea was that Okada was linking himself to the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he was going to give the IWGP Heavyweight title a final goodbye. Afterwards, bowing to the title, after he defeated Takagi, he at first he didn't accept the IWGP World Heavyweight title from Red Shoes. He walked straight past him and took the heavyweight title, the old heavyweight title, and placed it on the mat, bowing to the title, and then gave it away to be then crowned the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. So we are having that title that is going to stay around. And the entire idea, as I said, was to give it a proper goodbye. And I was wondering, this goodbye really was done in style, I thought. And I was wondering why they didn't do it in the first place. Because the goodbye they gave it when Ibushi was champion obviously was not very well received. This one I thought was done much better. And from there on, we will have the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship as the top title in New Japan. How did you take this goodbye to the title?
Did you have any thoughts on the match itself?
I guess we can talk about the match after this. I just wanted to talk about the title first.
I mean, like I said, I really wanted to say this to the end because I loathed this. Like all of it. I thought this was this is the dumbest crap in all of wrestling history. Like, I think you can legitimately make this case. This storyline is so stupid and nonsensical that I was so mad. Yeah, like everybody thought, oh, Ospreay came out. I don't care about Ospreay or his promo, at all. Like, I mean, it was fine. It could have been the greatest promo in history. Listen, this started when Okada talked about how the IWGP title, the old title that everybody likes. I'm going to say the IWGP and the IWGP heavyweight to kind of separate them, okay? Saying how that title has no value anymore because it was a part of the double title with the Intercontinental title. He didn't even want it. So then we go on, we unify the titles, and then Ibushi brings this stupid title that nobody likes out. And everything goes good for a while, and suddenly in the G1, he claims that he never wanted the title. He always wanted the old title. That's the exact opposite of what he said in reality. So then he brings back the old title that, again, originally he said had no value, not even a year before. So he brings that back. And the entire build to the main event match of Wrestle Kingdom, the entire build, he said that Shingo's title doesn't count. He said that it's not a real world title. He said he's the real world champion. Yeah. So now what does he do when he wins this title, wins this match that he's claimed that he has the real world title all along? He suddenly decides to throw it away and go to the title that you've said for 3 months doesn't mean anything. Gato is I couldn't believe this. This was so stupid. And I don't care about the title. Look, I don't even hate the title as much as a lot of people do as a design. It's fine. It's a title, whatever. But why would you build the match this way? Only to now suddenly say you're going to say goodbye to the title and accept this title that you've been burying for months and months on end. I hated this. It made me not even want to watch the second show. This was worse than the Evil match, in my opinion, because it's taken years of this terrible, terrible booking and just such a stupid storyline, just total trash. I hated this whole thing. It made the whole thing feel meaningless. And I'll spoiler alert the match. I didn't love it. I don't love any of these long Okada
rat matches. No, I didn't love the match either. I actually watched it again to just be sure that I was not missing anything, but this match was good.
It was the same as all the other Okada matches that he's had for 10 years. It's the same bullcrap. I didn't like it then when everyone liked it. I didn't like it now when everybody doesn't like it. It still sucked the entire time. But even still, I'd watch 100 Okada matches if you could make this make sense for this title, because it was so stupid how they handled it. It makes the title look like a joke already, and it already was bad because the fans hated it from the beginning.
My general point was about the goodbye for the old title, which was, I thought, in comparison, done better than last year.
Story building.
I really didn't give it much of a thought because we've been over the story multiple times with Okada, and that's where we are with the heavyweight title in New Japan. And I made sure I wrote an article for my friends of the Ringfuchs podcast in Germany to sort out this heavyweight title mess. And I made sure to highlight that there are basically three guys pointing at each other and saying fake world champion. And how do you proceed from there? I don't know. Okada now is the official world champion, but as you said, he for the last months he has said that this guy holding that championship is a fake world champion, and now he has the world champion himself.
And if he had just,
I think they really, sorry to they really lost a lot of steam and lost a lot of value to what a world championship can really mean. And I'm not sure if they are really, if they really are able to book a proper world championship at this point.
And I just think it's 100 times worse. If he had just done the same thing Ospreay had done and just had a replica and said, this is the title, that would have still been bad. Like, don't get me wrong. But his whole gimmick is that is the real world title. That he, like, Shingo is not the world champion because he doesn't have this title. And that's why they're fake champions. I have the real title. That's the title the fans want. That's the title the fans have always loved, has always had the great moments. I'm going to bring New Japan back from this crappy state it's in and bring it back to the one you all liked that I was the king of with this title. For him to throw it away and then go to the title that he buried is 100 times worse if he had just had a regular, you know, a replica or whatever, like Ospreay did. I just thought it was so poorly done and just such a bad idea. Everything about it was bad. Like, I thought this was such a downer ending to a show that I already didn't really love. You know, like I said, even the match itself. I mean, like I said, the match was fine. I would still would have it like, you know, 3.5, 3.75, that like 7, you know, out of 10, like that type of deal. I'm not gonna like rip the match and say it sucked, but I just don't like the, like, Okada style match, which is the same as it's always been, and I don't even need to get into it because I've said it a million times, and I'm going to say the same thing about the Ospreay match when we get to that. It's the same Okada match that we've always seen for all these years that I mean, never liked.
In the Okada match, in the Ospreay match, this match was done to have the killer sequences, you know? And this match was done to pop certain people that really like this style of the match.
And they were executed well, even in the Shingo match. It was executed well. You know, you had big spots, and the crowd was even starting to get into the Ospreay match.
Yeah.
By the end, they were firing back and forth with the forearms.
I mean, had this great powerbomb sequence. They had the moonsault from the lightning rig that Ospreay had done in a prior four-way for the junior title years ago. They had this forearm battle that I thought was executed well. So everything was executed really well. However, it's really hard to get into this story of these two.
And I just don't want to see, like, Okada, I praise them for keeping him away from the main event scene long enough to where it felt fresh and good.
Mm-hmm.
But after seeing these two matches, it just made me realize why I wanted him gone. Like, all those years. I can't get into this. Like, no matter how many people say it's great, look, these are highly rated matches. I can't trust both of them.
Yes.
You know? I could never get into it back then. And another thing, that Ospreay match really bothered me in its own right. The title situation was unforgivably stupid on the first night to see him give away the other title. I didn't love the spot where, because, and I'll tell you why. I think we will probably have some different reasons on this. I really hated, actually, the spot where Ospreay gave him the Shibata headbutt in that match.
Mm.
Because that, to me, I know everyone will say the safety and all that. I don't even care about that. What bothers me is that you're clearly playing off of somebody else's spot.
Yeah.
That you, like, that should have been Shibata's, like, moment, because you're trying to recreate real emotions that people felt, because everybody, you know, if Shibata did that, everyone would gasp and be worried and have real emotion, never mind who's winning and losing, but they would have real emotion. And Ospreay and Okada, whoever's idea it is, I don't want to blame anybody, but I'm just telling you, whoever came up with this spot was clearly trying to add on this, because this match really didn't have a great build. It didn't have great emotion to it at all anyway. So they're trying to drag stuff from Shibata that should have been his moment to bring into their match. I thought it was very lazy and poorly done. Some would say in poor taste, and I can't really argue it, but everything about it really made me just like shake my head. Where would that happen?
Why do you think I would have a different take on that?
Just that you might be more concerned about the safety of
it. Because
I don't care about that. Like I said, these are grown men. And if Shibata, his first move was a headbutt to Narita, I wouldn't have gotten upset about it. And I know a lot of people would have. Because, like I said, at the end of the day, these wrestlers are very well trained.
You know,
and very hard, and I always respect them for that.
There have been times where I've really gone way out of saying something about the safety of wrestlers. But nowadays, I've just come to accept for what it is. I will sometimes really groan about spots that will happen, but I'm not going to change anything of that. So it's not like I'm going to call out these things anymore now these days.
And I understand why you would even feel that way in the first place, but I just think that
there's other things in the match that we can talk about next year for the United States Heavyweight Championship that I was...
That's what you could point to.
That you're really shaking your head towards, because this giant-ass ladder that they used, what were they thinking?
And I hated that spot. Never mind the safety, but another thing that screwed everything up was it took this man like 5 minutes to set it up properly. And much like Evil and Sonata last year, you could hear the crowd start to laugh at him. And I was like, oh, this is a disaster. Like, this match.
It was really a disaster. And from the camera angle they did, it really looked like Kenta was falling out of the ring. I was really, really worried for him to hurt himself even more than he now did, where he basically injured every part of his body in some way or shape or form. He fell from this ladder onto this trash can with his face first. And this guy, much like Tanahashi, he was going to be on the third day of Wrestle Kingdom in this big Noah versus New Japan show. Big moment for Kenta. What are you thinking doing this kind of spot? It was very clear immediately after the match that he was not going to wrestle on that Yokohama show. I mean, you just had to look at his face. So, I mean, of course, yes, they wanted to give the fans a big show. They wanted to show them that they can do this style. But I think ultimately they did way too much, way too risky spots, given that they... in 2 days or 3 days after that, they had to go into the ring again. Not a good idea.
And okay, they showed they could do the style. Who was clamoring for this?
Like,
make its way to New Japan. That's what I'm wondering. Because you could tell another thing after this match was in Tanahashi's press conference, you could tell, like, man, that match sucked. Like, was what he was thinking, because his whole deal was like, I won, but I feel empty about all of this.
Yes, I don't want to win this way, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Clearly, the big point of it was Tanahashi. The finish was a spectacle. I will give them that. It was a spectacular finish where you had Tanahashi doing the high fly flow through the table off the top of the ladder. You know, so that's something you could, if this was their thinking, which I kind of think it was, I can't say for sure. You know, I didn't completely hate the idea of this, if your goal is, okay, you get this one big spot where Tanahashi can do the high fly flow, you can replay that on every Wrestle Kingdom in the future, because it looked incredible, you know, so just from a spectacle standpoint. It was stupid and all that stuff. I totally agree with you. But from a spectacle, you can replay him jumping off that ladder 20 times, you know, for the next 20 years. But yeah, knowing what was to come and how things played out, why, and like I said, who was this really meant to appeal to? The only thing I can say is I think it's fresher doing this here than if it were on an American show, like a WWE or AEW, because we've seen a million ladder matches over the years, and it doesn't even mean anything anymore. I think this at least had some curiosity appeal, but as it was, when, like, the match totally fell apart when he brought out the ladder and couldn't put it up. So they kind of redeemed themselves with a spectacle of the finish, But still, I pretty much agree with you on this one. Like, what were they thinking? Was the headline? At least with the Okada matches, I didn't love that much. There's at least some sense to it. This one, I definitely think there's a lot of there's more questions than answers coming out of it.
There really is, and ultimately, I don't really have to say anything else about this match.
And we don't have the answers,
except for that. I thought that the second show of these two, it started out better, I thought, than the first show, even though the ceiling was very low, to be quite honest. I didn't watch the pre-show six-man tag matches, which I thought maybe that helped for my liking of the show that I didn't watch these. I started with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title match.
Just to interrupt you real quick, I apologize, but how crazy is it that this man goes from the main event of the night one to
mind-blowing.
Yeah, like you really couldn't have come up with something else for you know,
you can't even beat a young lion in the opening match. No.
Yeah, like anything to get him on the show. Why? Like,
we're talking obviously about Shingo Takagi. He went from the main event to the opening or pre-show six-man tag with his NIJ mates. Yeah.
Crazy.
Really crazy. Shows you what standing is.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, you can say he basically lucked into this title run.
I feel like we've talked about this. I'm having deja vu right now.
Yeah. Opening junior heavyweight tag team title match. I didn't understand why to have Phantasmo and Taiji Ishimori in this match if they like exiled them after like 5 minutes. Stupid.
But at least we got a payoff finally to the loaded boot.
We were all waiting for that.
Yes, it was a huge reveal that his boot was in fact...
They had to do it in Wrestle Kingdom.
I mean, they really paid it off. I really wish they had given the other guys more time to close out the match, because I think they could have had a pretty good match. But yeah, like you said, all of that nonsense really took away from it.
One of the most inspiring matches on that show, because there was really a lot of effort put into this one, was the starter match with Sayaka Mitani and Tam Nakano defeating Mayu Iwatani and Starlight Kid. I came away, it was really weird to me seeing Mayu and Starlight Kid just team without any hesitations. I've had replies to that tweet that people didn't really think about that and weren't really weirded out by that, but I thought it was weird because Starlight Kid and her, clearly very different groups now. I know that they weren't the same, but I didn't really came away liking this.
Yeah, I think what made it is exactly what you said. This was arguably the most passionate match on the two nights, and that made up for what I complained about earlier, the first night especially. I think in general, the second night didn't suffer from that as much as the first night. It felt like they were here to try and... maybe they were trying to prove people wrong because they knew it was a low attendance.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened, but it felt like in general they really tried their best on this show for the most part. And some guys were getting, like, you know, Okan and Cobb were getting major matches that is fresh for them in the Dome, so they might have liked that. The Stardom match, what you said is totally true. If you follow the storyline of Stardom, then it really doesn't make sense for them to be teaming. But I think this match was ultimately meant to not even matter in the world of Stardom.
Yeah.
Like, I think what they were going for was, okay, you four, stand out. Like, go out and show people why Stardom is great. Work the best match you can, and we'll give you 10 minutes. Like, and they did it. I thought they worked really hard here. Even like Tam Nakano, who I haven't loved all of her white belt title reign, because a lot of times she gets into this dramatic stuff that I think is like wonderful when it's earned. But then it's like you're facing Sayaka and you're having like a 5-page Twitter thread on your history. It's it doesn't really earn, you know, it didn't really earn it. It didn't fit really. But in this match, she got to just go. And I thought she did a great job. Kamatani obviously got the big spotlight at the end with the Phoenix Splash. And, you know, if you are trying to stretch things again, you're right. Like, you're not wrong with what you said, but if you just want to give them the benefit of the doubt, just say, like, look, screw it. Just have them go out for the biggest match of their year. You could just say, look, Mayu and Starlight, they're teaming again. The return of the sisters, you know, which was their tag team before. And let's just go. And that's pretty much what I took
that's
this
what
as.
It is.
Yeah, an exhibition match was how I looked at this. Something that they probably won't even call on other than to say, they might say, oh, what was it like wrestling at the Dome, Kamatani, or whatever. Like, that's as far as they'll go with it, more so than trying to play this in any kind of storyline. But you are right, it would have been better if they could have, because they have so much talent that they totally could have done a similar style of match and had an amazing performance and stood out. But they just seemed to wanted to really push these four in particular as,
I can,
you know,
see
to give
why,
them...
of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I just think that these are the four they chose for this spot, and that's how it went. But like you said, you can see why the storyline, I wish it would have melded a little bit better. But I thought the match itself was very good, one of the better ones on night two. I really enjoyed what they did.
One thing we have to talk about is Shima coming into Wrestle Kingdom. We were wondering what was going to happen after Sho went to great in July, and obviously this one is the answer. Shima obviously said, okay, now I'm going to be on your big show. And he was accompanied to the ring by Elenderman and Teok. We don't have to talk about the match, really. Shima being on this show was a nice surprise.
Pretty unexpected, I will say. Yep. He was in the Battle Royal on the first night. We definitely don't need to talk about that. Yeah. But him and Fujinami were the surprises, and somehow Shima made it to the end. And at the end of all of this, Minoru Suzuki ended up winning the King of Pro Wrestling title. A prestigious win here at the Tokyo Dome. What do you think the future is of this title?
I don't care.
I think there will be many more Yano and Suzuki matches over the next few months. So get ready. Buckle up, Striga. It's coming. The rivalry will continue.
I will just point to the statement that I just made.
Fair.
Okay. Let us move on to the final two matches that we have not talked about yet. Last year, Dylan, at Wrestle Kingdom, the United Empire lost all their singles matches. This year, at Wrestle Kingdom, the United Empire lost all their singles matches. Why is this group still around?
Brilliant storytelling, Striga. Right here. I mean, 1 year they lost all of their matches.
1 year in the making.
Yeah, and then the next year they lost all of their matches. They're on a streak, Striga. Can't you see the big picture?
Seriously, their whole deal is about they are the United Empire and they are supposed to be the number one group. That's why they are around.
Well, they're united, clearly, just
they
in
are?
Losing.
Yes.
They are one for one and one for all with losses.
And, I mean, last year we said, okay, yes, they are bouncing back. They are now angry, blah, blah, blah. But this is the exact same story, basically, this year. So I don't really see any benefit from it. I don't know why they are doing it. I don't know why it happened like that way. I was really surprised that Naito beat Cobb. And I was after the match, not so much, but I was really surprised that they are doing the big Okada Naito match right off the bat. Thought they were waiting for that match. I thought Cobb was going to be the next challenger for Okada. Mm-hmm. But now it's Naito. But I'm still, I really, Henare, once again, relegated to just being a ring company. Here to the ring, Okan losing, Cobb losing, Ospreay losing. This group just doesn't have it.
You know, I was really surprised Okan didn't win here. But when I looked back at it, it makes sense because I know we've had this conversation before. They don't push him that much as people kind of act like. If you look at his run in G1, he wasn't really – everybody picked that he'd be around on the last day. Yep. He was gone relatively early. Then, you know, you had the stuff with Yano. Yano beat him in an Olympic-style wrestling match that should be his forte.
right.
I'm not foreseeing this big push for Okan, at least yet. I'm not saying it will never happen, but for whatever reason, Gato just doesn't want to push these young guys or do anything with them. And I think that's continued here. And because Sonata, what did he really gain from this win at the end of the day? Over, and I got to say, this match exceeded my expectations. It was a pretty solid match, all things considered. Like, nobody really, Sonata didn't mess anything up. It wasn't some horrible, goofy match. They had a pretty solid match here. But at the end of the day, what did Sonata really gain?
He didn't gain any positioning. He's the same. He's on the same level that he's been in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, maybe even lower than back then. At least they had the storyline with Okada where he would get title shots and stuff. True. Now he feels like as mid-card as you.
Well, he's apparently going to challenge Tanahashi for the U.S. title.
Okay. Well, that's something for him. Okay, at least he gained something out of this. He was the next U.S. guy. But even so, I honestly thought it would be more interesting if Cobb and Okan had both won and Ospreay had lost. I think there's more of a story to tell with that. That, like, hey, you could even draw it right back to last year if you wanted. Say, hey, we both improved, and you are still the weak link right now. I think that would have been a much better story than just having them all lose again. But I guess they had their plans to set up title matches at least, so I can't hate it that much at the end of the day if they set up something at least with them. But for me, I predicted that both Okan and Cobb would win, but I was wrong.
Yeah. Too bad. Cobb apparently has a knee injury. We don't have the specifics of that yet. But I want to say that I really, really liked the Tetsuya Naito and Jeff Cobb match.
That was my favorite match on the show.
Yeah, really good story. This is just a wrestling story that you can get behind. This is no convoluted thing. That's what I wrote afterwards on Twitter. No convoluted wrestling, just a clear storyline of Tetsuya Naito being the underdog against Jeff Cobb, taking out Jeff Cobb's knees, taking him down, and then eventually beating him. This was a great, great storyline in its simplicity, I want to say. So also in 15 minutes, great length for this one. Yeah, just very well done.
I got to give Naito some credit too here. I don't know, maybe that time off really helped him, but I thought he bumped really hard and made Cobb look even stronger and more violent.
Listen, he will always bump hard.
Yeah, you know, and I was thinking about that when you were saying, oh, well, I thought they were going to wait on that Naito match. Do you think that maybe they're thinking, look, he's as fresh as he can be now. He's probably going to get injured soon. We might as well just go ahead and get this over with while we still can.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of surprised at first because they are telling this story that Naito wants to headline next year's Wrestle Kingdom, and that would obviously the match to go with would obviously be Naito and Okada.
Right.
So I was surprised that they are doing this now, but then again I was thinking, of course, yes, Naito will lose to Okada now in Okada's first defense, and then he will have the entire year to climb back up to maybe eventually win the G1 Climax to then lose to Okada again in the Tokyo Dome next year.
Yes.
But then that will make kind of sense why he is the challenger early in the year to have the storyline of him climbing back to Okada's level.
Yeah, it's much more interesting if he loses now rather than he lost that like right before the G1 started. And you're going to be like, oh man, he just had a title match.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense.
Yes. Yeah, that is basically it for Wrestle Kingdom, I guess. As I said, I'm pretty much sure that we are getting 2 days of Wrestle Kingdom next year again.
I can see them going to three.
Really?
Although technically we did.
We already did, yes.
Yes.
Do you really think that they will? Wow.
I absolutely think it's possible that they make that step forward, especially if they think that COVID stuff is going to be lifted. I definitely could see them making a push for a third show because, like, you know, logically, a second show is far too much, but they do it anyway. Yes. So I think they're going to want, and now they've done it for three straight years. It's become the new normal at the end of the day. They've managed to do that and make people think of Wrestle Kingdom Night 1 and Night 2, but also all of their shows really are multiple shows. You know, like most of their big shows are Night 1 and Night 2. Mm-hmm. Even at the Dome they did in September, there was two nights of that too. So they've kind of made people accept that that's the new normal. So I think in their mind, having a third night would make it stand out, similar to how they thought this year would. But yeah, that's just a prediction I have.
I will not rule it out.
But it would be bad.
It would be a bad decision, yes.
Yeah,
but you can't pretend anymore that these shows are really that meaningful if you stretch it to three. As we said when we started the review of this, this just has lost its magic.
Yeah,
just saying the third night of wrestling, just as I said, it sounds stupid.
Even the second night, I think, is already. I think we're already past that point. Like, I think that you're talking about the third night. I think we're already at that point with the second night, already having accomplished all that. So they're going to try. That seems to be their answer to any kind of problems. Is like, oh, we can run another show.
Yeah,
like
more of that.
Yeah, exactly. That seems to be their answer to any kind of issues more so than any big changes. But I hope you're right, and maybe they're like, okay, now the second night will be as far as we go. We'll have another four-man tournament, multi-man deal with two titles to main event both shows because we can't make any of our other titles mean anything. But let me ask you this. Like, I'm going to close off this New Japan's part with this. Maybe we could talk about the NOAH New Japan show briefly.
Actually, Dylan, I would rather push that when we've seen the show because we've been going really long now.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Overall, let me ask you this. How long do you think this Okada title reign will last?
Very long.
I agree with you on that. So you think that he will have it at January 4th, 2023?
Yes.
I agree with you once again on that one.
There is a chance of a brief evil title run in between. You can't rule that out.
But that's another thing they like doing. It's like that heel, like 1 or 2 month title reign that breaks stuff up.
But ultimately, next year's Wrestle Kingdom will see Okada walking in as champion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And who do you think will win the G1 and who will be the challenger?
Well, as I said, Naito.
Okay. I think that would be very logical as well. And who do you think the other two challengers will be for these other shows?
I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Like they really need to get it back. If they whatever shows they do, they need to find a way to not do this title stuff over multiple shows.
They've done it, as you said, they've done it 3 times in a row now. Do they even have an idea what to do except for that?
Yeah, you're right. Hopefully, like I said, my only point on the NOAH show, because when you didn't watch it, I was just going to say, I hope that it leads to some more stuff in the future, so maybe they can pull out something like that for future big shows to kind of beef up their cards, have the GHC title defended at the Dome or something like that. You can kind of stretch things out a little bit.
That would be very cool, and like kind of going to that NOAH show a bit, a lot of wrestlers have called out each other. For example, Desperado, I've seen, made a tweet mentioning how Naito and Nakajima have gone at each other in this the multi-man match. Shingo has looked at the GHC heavyweight title. But that all feels like wrestlers doing stuff in the matches. And the companies, I don't think, are very much behind that because this show, as we said on prior shows that we did, could have been singles matches, but it was just multi-man matches. And I just think that the companies are not behind doing singles matches because the big players on each company will have to lose to the other company, and that's not happening.
Yeah. It's really as simple as that. Unless you're Kaito.
Sure.
I was thinking more like, because like I said, I think that having guys face each other will be a tough deal. At least for now, maybe one day we can get there. But I think even just having a NOAH versus a NOAH guy like face for the GHC title at the Dome would be meaningful for the Dome itself. Sure. It would be something they can add on there. Yeah, I definitely don't think that there will be.
I have to make this point.
Yeah,
NOAH themselves have their Budokan show on January 1st. So blowing a big match on New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom wouldn't really make sense.
That's a great point. So it's a lot of political stuff going on, clearly, in this run here, as always, you would expect. But, it's just a crazy thing, because really all three of these Wrestle Kingdom shows, if you want to call the third one even a Wrestle Kingdom, it really circles back to what you said at the start. I think that ultimately this could have been a great week of wrestling for the big shows, but I think ultimately the hype for them and the passion of maybe the wrestlers, but especially the fans, went way down before all of them. And I don't think they quite lived up to what they could have been.
Mm. Yes. Well, that is ultimately it, right?
Yes. I predict Shibata will win the G1 this year. I'm about to surprise you.
That's a great prediction, too.
Yes, go for it. And plus, Gato never believes in Naito. That's my logic on that one. The only thing I want to say is... everybody keep an eye out, because I know we got a lot of support in the year-end awards for the feud between Marvelous and Sendai Girls.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be a big match with Takamiya Roha versus Chihiro Hashimoto. All the three AW titles on the line. The tag titles and the singles matches are all on the line. It happens, I think, the day after this will probably release. But find it, watch it, do whatever you got to do. Take some time, because it's going to be a great match. So I just wanted to hype that up. That's the thing, we kind of talked about it earlier with all the stuff going on. Eventually, stuff will get lost in the shuffle. But I think that feud meant something to a lot of people with the Gaia-ism show last year in June. And I think it kind of died out as well. So get on that if you're a fan of great wrestling, because that's going to be a banger of a match, Iroha versus Hashimoto.
Definitely. All right, Dylan. So much for that.
Yep.
So I want to thank you very much for doing this very long show. Once again, I thought we had to... It sounds so bad. We had to do this.
We were forced to do this.
Yes. I forced Dylan to do this. No, we of course wanted to do this, but there was just so much stuff that we had to go so long, I guess, to like get it all in, because I really like to get it all in with our shows. Talk about all these different companies, not only New Japan Pro Wrestling, of course. You know that when you're listening to this show.
Right.
Getting a lot of other stuff, so I want to thank you, Dylan, very much for taking the time once again for doing this. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely, me too. And such a big week of the year. The truth is that a lot of the shows going forward will not be as packed as these last couple have been. Now that the big days are over, right. You know. So I really cherish this time that we have to talk about these shows. Everything going on in the world right now, I know there's, like I said, a lot of negative feelings and bad stuff there, but I always enjoy wrestling and also talking to you about these shows. And I know the listeners, like I said, have been very complimentary, and you know, I think they've dug our shows that we've done the last few episodes too. So hopefully we can continue that momentum.
Yes.
Even as, you know, January, the first week is over with. There's still always, the world of wrestling is always going on in Japan, and I know we'll be having some great episodes coming forward, and I can't wait to talk about whatever happens right here on the Eastern Lariat.
Some great closing words on your part, Dylan. I want to thank everyone very much for listening to this show. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.